This is our new policy. I'll be the only one allowed to speak in this meeting.
And then turn them off, always can. I know.
I guess we didn't want you to say much tonight, you know.
I'll try and keep it on red most of the time.
We'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council meeting of January 7th, 2025. I'd like to announce that I wrote one check already this year and I got the year right on it. So usually it takes me a month to do that. So, first item, we'll turn over to Heidi for a financial report.
Thank you. So the reports in the packet are for November of 2024. So 5 months through the fiscal year, we're 42% elapsed. The general fund revenues are at 22.8% collected. Expenses are at 40.2% collected. That's within 1% of this time last year. So we're right on track with what we would anticipate for this time of year. I did note that general fund revenues are up 15.3% in the areas we discussed at one of the prior finance reports. So courts is still up, fines and forfeitures, and franchise taxes. There are some changes to the fuel tax and telecom taxes that took effect on January 1st. I'm not entirely sure the impact of those, but I've given some estimates in the packet. As far as fuel tax, it is up 2 cents per gallon, and I anticipate that will be about an additional $35,000 for the year in the roadway development fund. And then telecom tax, it's actually a decrease of about 23 cents per line per month, and that should maybe reduce those revenues about $21,000 to $25,000. Impact fees are ahead of all of last year, so that is somewhat exciting. So I threw this slide in because we're always assessing how we're doing with impact fees, because this really dictates how fast we can move through our capital plans, whether we need to pull back because we're so dependent on this funding for some of those projects. So you can see for fiscal year 2025, this is actually through the end of December. These numbers here were collected, I think it's about 209,000. So we've already exceeded last year's collections as of December. So we'll just keep watching this, but we're also very hopeful that we are not going to be necessarily like 2020 or 2021, but that we will at least be on an upward trend. Were there any questions about any of the things in the financial report? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Next item is the annual training on the Open and Public Meetings Act, and turn it over to Wendy.
This is my favorite thing to do. It's that annual night where we all get to meet and be trained on the Open and Public Meetings Act. So we have some fun, but I first wanted to go over a few of the changes just so that you're aware why we hold this, you know, require training annually is because the legislature constantly changes laws, and that this is happens to be one of them. So this year, there were actually two bills that made some changes to the Open and Public Meetings Act amendments. One was House Bill 36, and the other was Senate Bill 211. The Senate Bill 211 was mostly most of the changes applied to water infrastructure amendments, but the House Bill 36 made some modifications to some of the definitions in there and some of the other things. So I thought maybe we'd go over that a little bit, and then we'll have some fun. You can listen to me be boring for a minute while you eat. So some of the modifications of House Bill 36 that were applicable to the Open and Public Meetings Act included, they deleted some definitions. There was one in there for convening, one for monitor, and one for transmit, and they deleted all of those definitions. They modified definitions for the anchor location, meeting, and quorum, okay? And so I thought, and then they enacted a new definition, and that is for relevant matter. So I thought maybe I would just review what those definitions are. Because one, you've heard this a lot, and so somewhere in here these changes applied to it. But we used to have something that talked about our meetings and how there was like a definition for meeting, and then there was a definition of not a meeting. Right? What wasn't a meeting? And that's kind of what they've taken out and scratched. So before, it was if there was a social gathering or a chance meeting, that's what they called it back in before they made these changes, that was not considered a meeting. But now they've just made changes and modified these. So I'm just going to read. Don't mind me being boring for a minute. I'm going to read the changes, hopefully, if I can find it, to anchor location. Anchor location kind of became a thing when we had a pandemic. And then we realized that sometimes we can't always meet somewhere. And it might not only be related to a pandemic. We had earthquakes and other things in our state. So maybe the normal meeting place wasn't a thing. So here's the new definition for anchor location. It means the physical location where the public body conducting an electronic meeting under Section 52.4.207 normally conducts meetings of the public body. Or it can also mean a location other than location described in the previous section that is reasonably as accessible to the public as the location described in the first section. So basically, an anchor location could be here, but if it's not here, then we could find somewhere else that the public could meet adequately and have what we needed for that. The other definition that changed was meeting, and they don't have one that says not a meeting anymore. So meeting means a gathering of a public or specified body with a quorum present and that is convened by an individual with authority to convene the public body or specified body and following the process provided by law for convening the public body or specified body and for the express purpose of acting as a public body or specified body to do three things. First, receive public comment about a relevant matter. That's where relevant matter comes into needing a definition. Deliberate about a relevant matter or take action upon a relevant matter. So those are the things that they define as a meeting. And then the other change was they modified the definition for quorum. And so at least I'm hoping this is going to help answer your question about do we have to have a quorum present for meetings. The new refined definition is a quorum means a simple majority of the membership of a public body unless otherwise defined by applicable law. So membership of a public body to me means those that are elected or appointed to run a meeting, right? But then it has that unless otherwise. So I was like, okay, can I defer to Todd?
You can if you want to.
I would love to.
I do think this is a change in the Open and Public Meetings Act and a change in the way we've administered things. I think now with a six-member council form of government, your simple majority is four. In the five-member council, it could change things in some cases. So I've strained to think of a circumstance where this might change the way you operate for the six-member council form. I don't really have one yet, but I suspect when we have vacancies and we're governed by the election code, this won't come into play. I think for boards and commissions, we might see some operation. For the council, I'm hopeful it doesn't change much.
So that was always the trick question, and
what a quorum
and,
was.
You know what's, yeah, because if you have a five-member council and you have three members, you know, you think okay, that's two-thirds, but it's really not. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, 60%, not 66 point. You know, and so you really needed four.
And I think you might have had a question.
I have a question about not council meetings, but our board meetings. So one thing that we've run into previously is that if we don't have a quorum of the appointed community members, we have not been able to hold a meeting. But my question is, can we also count in that group of which we want a quorum? I'm appointed, but I don't think I was counted as one. It's just those voting members, I think, is who we were trying to get the quorum from. And can we also count city staff members? So if we have like three city staff and myself, that's four people there. If we have five people from the community, but not the majority of that five are there, but one of them. So now we've got five people at the meeting, but only one of them is the community member. Would that count as a quorum?
I'm going to defer to Todd.
I think that will depend on what your ordinance that creates the public body says. And I think you need to think very carefully about the policy behind the way you answer that question. I think the purpose of the act is transparency. And they have landed heavily on the side of transparency in the way they've defined a public body. And so I think the policy of the city ought to at least consider that when you're creating your ordinance and how you define that for the purpose of your meetings and your quorum requirements. I don't know of very many public entities that have given quorum status through non-voting members of a public body.
So I don't know if that answers it entirely. One thing I know, specifically for health and wellness, let's say, and now for all of these three new committees that we just enacted, they were all done by resolution. Resolution is similar to an ordinance, you know, in that it's the enabling provisions for how this body's going to work. And part of the health and wellness I guess, resolution that was drafted, it does have that the mayor will appoint somebody, and it does have staff listed as making up that group of people that will meet. So perhaps having those people would help attain that simple majority, because they are, but we'd have to have maybe Todd take a look at that. As a matter of fact, just as a matter of interest, I think we're going to try to maybe amend that health and wellness resolution, perhaps, because, you know, we were trying to pull staff and staff these other committees, and so we really need to make a few changes, because there were some people on there of staff on the health and wellness committee specifically that may need to be removed from that ordinance. And then also there was just another matter of how long the terms each person was going to do it. There were two people that initially started with a three-year term, and the other three started with four-year terms. But in 12 years, that would mean we'd be replacing the entire board. And I think the intent was similar to what we just did with the arts and trails and transportation and events committees. And that is after the first three-year term, then it would defer to four-year terms from then on. So we have a couple of changes that maybe we could make. And maybe we can look at that and have Todd take a look at that resolution as well, to see if there was anything that we could add to maybe help strengthen the ability to have a quorum.
Thank you. And I will just say, from my perspective, the goal is not to not be transparent, because we still would notice for meetings, we would still post our minutes, but it's just to prevent us from being slowed down from being able to do work if we have low attendance at the meetings. So how I would prefer to interpret it as broader quorum. But that does bring up an additional question. If we have a committee of six that are doing events, and then they have a subcommittee of three that are going to do a particular event, do they have to notice for their subcommittee meetings? Or are they able to do those on their own?
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, we'll try and answer those questions. I think the resolutions were written, I think, mostly in the way that Todd responded just a moment ago, that the appointed members, the voting members of those boards, are how we base our determination as to whether there's a quorum or not. Now, if we want to change that, we can explore doing that. But that's the way I believe we've kind of defaulted to that position today. And so.
Well, because one reason of that, too, is if you've got.
Here's your mic.
If you've got the appointed member, then as a board, typically with a board or commission, you can have the board themselves remove that person, right? There's some provisions that you can get rid of that person as long as they're an appointed member, but we can't fire a staff member, or we can't fire. So the committee itself governs itself through its appointments.
And I would think our default position should be, anytime we're meeting as a quorum or sub-quorum or subcommittee, that we just err on the side of, yeah, you know, we notice it, yeah, so that we're...
Yeah, I have no problem with the noticing or even the self-governing. The real concern that we've talked about before is that we would have low attendance at our meeting by our appointed members, and then we would end up canceling the meetings and then not be able to move forward with some of the things we were trying to work on, and that became problematic. So I'd love a way to, if we have even a small group of people that are invested, that they're not stymied from being able to get work done because other people are less invested. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Excellent. Thank you. The other definition that was added, like I mentioned, was relevant matter. And the definition per code says relevant matter means a matter that is within the scope of the authority of the public body or specified body. And relevant matter does not include, for a public body with both executive and legislative responsibilities, a managerial or operational matter. Sorry. So those were the definitions that they, the legislature, changed up a little bit, modified. They repealed some language relating to the posting of a written notice of an electronic meeting. They also modified a provision related to the anchor location because they made some changes with that, and they modified language related to the recording of a vote at an electronic meeting. And then they repealed the language related to a chance or social meetings and replaced it with language prohibiting individuals constituting a quorum of a public body from taking certain action. So that's how they got around that, is that if you do have a chance meeting, you just should not be conducting the business of the city. And then it also repealed obsolete language and makes conforming and technical changes. So those were kind of the things that changed last year in the Open and Public Meetings Act. And so I don't know if you have any questions or if you're ready to play a fun little game and see how smart we all are. Because I like games. I don't know, did you all bring a cell phone? Y'all have the ability? Okay. So we are going to play Kahoot. And you might have played Kahoot at other meetings in the past. So I'm going to flip the slide. Don't jump into this pin number right there. That is inaccurate. When I made the slide, that was the pin. But go ahead and join at www.kahoot.it, and I'll go get the actual game number on the screen.
If staff wants to play, you're welcome to play, but you have to use your real name.
www.kahoot.
Okay, so you'll join at the Kahoot website. The game pin is now going to be 328-819. And when you're in, we'll see your name pop up on the screen. And once everybody's joined, I'm going to see how smart staff is. All those that are willing to risk it, there might be a reward. I'm not sure. Yeah.
You gotta have a little fun, right?
Okay, let's see. One, two, three. Mayor?
It kicked me out, so I.
Okay, so you're back. Going back. All right. Oh, yeah, you could use the QR code. There you go. Okay, who am I not? Do we have 2, 3, 4? I have 10. Lisa. No, Lisa, are you on here?
I am, Jean.
Perfect. Awesome. Okay, is there anybody else who wants to wait
our nickname.
And jump on? It's okay, as long as we know you, Jean, that's fine. All right. Does any other staff want to log in, or are you ready to go? Okay, we're ready. Here we go. Let's have some fun.
So if we do poorly on this, we don't get credit for this training?
Well, you will get credit for training, but hopefully we can teach you something. So the question is, what does the Utah Open Meetings Act regulate? And you're going to see some colored boxes on your screen. The red one is for business licenses, the yellow one for education policies, the blue one for public meetings, or the green one for traffic laws. Go ahead. I think you have like one more second. 10 out of 10. That's good. Or, well, I'm not sure if there's 10. Maybe there's more or less, but good job. All right, here we go. Karen, you must have been the fastest one to answer it. Maybe. There is a fast feature to this. So, are we ready? Next question. Public bodies must post meeting agendas how early? Red will be 1 week before the meeting, yellow 24 hours before, blue 72 hours before, or green at least 24 hours before the meeting. Ooh, six people got it correct with at least 24 hours before the meeting. And that includes even emergency meetings. You have to post at least 24 hours in advance, okay? All right. Well, you know, that's okay. It's all for fun and fun for all. Jean, good job. All gatherings of public officials are considered meetings. True or false? Blue, true, false, red. Ooh, good job. That is false. So there are some things when we gathered for our holiday board dinner, for instance, that is not considered a meeting, okay? All right. Ooh, she's quick. All right, true or false? Can the public comment in every open meeting? Blue, true. Red, false. Yes or no? Yeah, yes, true, false, no. Okay, seven of you. The correct answer is true. Can the public comment in every meeting? They can if the mayor or anybody else wants to, or, you know, somebody turns the time over to them.
That's why I voted false.
And that was a tough question. All right, here we go. Closed sessions are permitted for what reason? Red, personnel issues. Yellow, any reason. Blue, public events. Green, budget planning. What is one of the reasons? There's a lot of reasons why they're permitted. Which one of these best answers one of those reasons? Oh, good job. You guys all were on the same page for that one, and that was correct. Personnel issues. It's the character and competency or something of. Yeah. Good job. You are on fire. Look at that. All right, true or false? All meetings must be in person. Blue, true. Red, false. All of you got that right. That is false. We can have electronic meetings. We adopted a policy for that. All right. She's still on fire. Here we go. Who enforces the Open Meetings Act? Red, Mayor's Office. Yellow, Attorney General. Blue, Local Sheriff. Green, State Police. One of those really does enforce. And it is the Attorney General's office, so that was good. Most of us got that correct. Let's see who our top scoreboard winners are at this point. You gotta be quick to make a dent here. Are we ready? Training on the act is required for whom? Who has to train on this? Red, all citizens. Yellow, public officials. Blue, students. Green, business owners. Public officials was the correct choice, everyone. Good job. All right, we'll see if she got bumped. Nope. This is going to be tough. Electronic meetings are allowed under what condition? Red, with notice. Yellow, no conditions. Blue, with permission. Green, without notice. You guys did so well. With notice is the correct answer. Yeah, you have to, and we have a little clause at the top of all of our agendas that say they may be conducted via electronic means.
so that if something were to happen, we're ready to go. Okay, number 10. Amendments to the Act can be made by whom? Red, the governor. Yellow, local councils. Blue, federal government. Or green, state legislature. Who can amend the Open and Public Meetings Act? Good job, state legislature. And they're good at it. Right? All right. Penalties for violating the Act include what? Red, fines. Yellow, community service. Blue, warning only. Green, jail time. Ooh, what can happen if we violate this Act? Is this new to anybody? Oh, fines. There are fines that can be one of the penalties if we violate this Act. What is the fine? Is it a Class B or can it? Okay, yeah. Oh, so I guess if you picked green, you maybe partially got it correct. Oh, all right. Look how we're doing. Keep up the good work. Meetings must be open to who? Red, everyone. Yellow, members only. Blue, state residents. Green, public officials. Why do we have open meetings? Good job. Nobody missed it. For everyone, that is correct. Oh, Craig, you keep climbing. The Act applies to which types of meetings? Secret meetings, red. All public, yellow. Private only, blue. State only, green. 11, all 11 of you got it right. All public meetings. You just got to be quicker to the draw. All right, you ready? Recording of a public meeting is allowed by the meeting chairman, red, media only, yellow, anyone, blue, government officials, green. Good job. That is true. Anyone can record a public meeting. We record them. I thought it's interesting to note that somebody called me the night we were going to have our meeting about the homeless shelter. And she said, we have a local Facebook group. Can we come and video and post it live to our group? Because they might have to click too many times to get to your link. And I said, yeah, go ahead. You're welcome to record it. Verified with Todd that was correct. But yes. Okay, next. Well, we'll see how they're doing. Pretty good. All right. Notice of meetings must include what? There are some things we have to include in the notice. Red, meeting minutes. Yellow, agenda and time. Blue, attendees' names. Or green, location only. Good. Agenda and the time have to be on all of our notices. Let's take a look at the scoreboard. All right, those top three are going to be hard to beat. True or false, meetings can be held without an agenda. True blue, false red. Look, it didn't give you much time, but you guys just did that so quick. Good job. You cannot hold a meeting if you don't have an agenda. That's part of what has to be noticed. So, all right, scoreboard changed. Ooh, mayor, you bumped up. Good job. All right, here we go. Double points. The Act was established in what year? Ooh, red, 1978. Yellow, 1973. Blue, 1976. Green, 1980. The correct choice was 1978, and one person got it right. Oh, so this might change our scoreboard. Good job, Tammy. Well, and I guess you're not on the top five, but that's okay. Good job for getting that right. You're making a comeback. Three in a row, Tammy. All right, here we go. Double the points again. Who can call for an executive session? Red, any member. Yellow, the public. Blue, only the chair, or green, state officials. We can call for an executive session. I think that's what we call our regular sessions. I'm not sure. Is it that? No, that's not right. Okay. Who can call for an executive session? The correct answer was any member. So we were split on that. Does anybody want to expound on that? No? I don't know why. Something on the agenda, yeah. And that's kind of our rule. I don't know if
any council member can make a motion during the meeting to go into executive session.
Oh, there you
go. As long as it's for one of the purposes for which you can go into the meeting, you could just make a motion.
Okay, interesting. Okay, let's see what that did. Wow. The guy sitting next to the attorney. No, just teasing. All right, minutes must be approved within how many days? Red, next meeting. Yellow, within 30 days. Blue, within 10 days. Green, within 60 days. All right, the correct answer was within by the next meeting. So there's not really a... And why this is tricky, because some of you might have picked 30 days, but that's not right either, because the minutes, once they're approved, we have 3 days to post them to the public. So 3 days to post to the public, but they need to be approved at the next meeting. One thing to note, RDA meetings, we typically have only had them annually or so. And so you'll be approving the next RDA meeting minutes at your next meeting, which will be a year after the fact almost. So. All right, well, I think we're getting close to being done. Maybe we are done. Okay, so the top three. John, you made it to the podium. Karen, what in the world?
When you break every rule, you learn what the rules are.
Ooh, there you go. Good job. And Mayor, this doesn't mean you didn't pass the training. It just means you had fun doing it, right? Okay. Are there any questions that anybody has on any of this, by the way?
I want a recount.
A recount?
You know, I had a thought that led to another irrelevant thought. When Wendy talked about in a location for the anchor of the meeting. And we have an excellent, if something was to happen to this building, we have an excellent option at the Public Works building. We could actually meet there easily. And then one of the worst kept secrets in Salt Lake was that Goldman Sachs was at the 222 South Main building. And they had, so post 9/11, they thought, we really are vulnerable being in downtown Manhattan. And so they went out and rented a building over in New Jersey, a 6-story building, totally empty, workstations, computers set up, everything set up, so that if there was a terrorist attack or something in New York, they could instruct all their people to go to New Jersey and keep the money flowing. And Hurricane Sandy came in and took out New Jersey and Manhattan both. And so they had to fly people into Salt Lake to keep that going. But so my point is that no matter how well you prepare, there's always a possibility of some kind of hiccup there.
It's true. Okay, that concludes our training then. So I'm going to click to the next item and turn it over to you to make my grand introduction, I hope. Okay, maybe not.
Tell them what's coming up, Mayor.
Looks like we're still stuck with you, Wendy, doing a overview and presentation of the 2024 amendments to the Municipal Officers and Employees Ethics Act.
Rock stars.
Do
did get a rock star. She did stay awake all night.
She texted me earlier asking.
And you guys, if you're smart or if you'd rather a rock star, you can have one. I wasn't sure if any of you liked them.
I know John. I don't know. Maybe you know somebody who does.
If you don't. Oh, smart water. Yeah, so really smart.
Trophies, but I'm a mom. He might know somebody who is. I did get.
I think before we leave. Before we leave the open training, we should have Todd tell one Dave Church joke, maybe.
Yeah, what do you think? What do you got, Todd?
Todd, do you have one?
That I can share here.
Okay.
I have many.
All right.
Okay, this is one that I thoroughly studied. So hopefully I have some answers to the questions. I wanted to review this, and this is kind of why we changed the Open and Public Meetings Act training to January, because there were some new changes also last year in the legislative session to the Municipal Officers and Employees Ethics Act. When you were elected, let's say the city's had a one-page disclosure in the past conflict of interest, and there are a lot of requirements if you have conflicts that you should be familiar with in that act, okay? But something new that the legislature did this year is they are requiring a little more of their elected officials. So any mayor, city council, or a county commissioner. Those are the ones that this new section of code applies to in the Municipal Officers and Employees Ethics Act. So there was, I'm gonna use my PowerPoint and then I'll be really smart. Okay, so House Bill 80 made some changes. It required elected officers of the city to annually file a conflict of interest disclosure statement. You were filing that. This is just new because there are specifics that you have to provide responses for. I did put with your mail up there on the dais for you is the new form, and it requires the city recorder to do a few things. One, I have to post an electronic copy of the disclosure statement on the city's website. And I have to provide the Lieutenant Governor's office with a link to that electronic posting described above. So we used to do this for your financial disclosures. All of you have been through an election, and we used to do that. And this is very much the same as that, but new types of disclosure. It requires the Lieutenant Governor's office to post the link that we send them on the state conflict of interest disclosure website. And then it also standardizes the monetary amount that triggers an elected officer's disclosure obligation. And so they weren't all over the board, which maybe was the case with some different boards and entities. And it established a penalty for an elected officer who fails to file a conflict of interest disclosure statement. And it also includes requirements for clerks and lieutenant governors related to the reporting of these campaign financial statements for candidates of the municipal office. So this next year, I don't think that a lot changed with that, to be honest, for the financial reportings. But those that are running for office will just need to make sure that you're doing it all timely like we've done in the past. And then the other part of House Bill 80 was that it just made some technical and conforming changes. So what does this mean for North Salt Lake?
elected officials. One, we have this new disclosure form. And you have to do this annually, responding to each of the items in code 20A-11-1604, subsection 6. And this form that the city has created cites all of the different code references, so you'll see that you're doing all of theirs. In subsection 6, there was A through O, things that had to be included in this form. And so this will show you what those things are. Because this is new this year, you're getting this information tonight. Ted is not here. I'm going to send out a reminder tomorrow via email and send you this form electronically too, but I've provided the written copy so that you can go ahead and start working on it. I think there's eight different things in here, plus then your signature statement that you certify that it's all correct to the best of your ability. All elected official disclosures are due no sooner than January 1 and before January 31st each year, and will be posted on the city website until you're no longer in office. If you don't do that, then I have to do a job that was not very fair, that they made city recorders responsible for this, but they enacted some criminal penalties. If you fail to report timely, you will be given a Class B misdemeanor. And also there are civil penalties, which they would allow a charge of a $100 fine if officers fail to file. So if you didn't file by January 31st, then there's this, or whenever you file, I have to look at your form, see if it's accurate. How am I going to know? And then either let you know that, yes, you've done what you needed to do, or, oh, you might want to fix this or that or the other thing, like I'm going to know. And then you need to get it back to me within so many days, or else I have to report it to the Attorney General's office. That's how that rolls down, I think. So fun, not fun. But do you have any questions? Did you look at the packet? Did you look at the form? Are you have any concerns?
I have a curiosity question. Are state elected officials already held at this standard?
I believe, so this subsection 6 really applied to school board people at first, right? They've now made municipal officers go over to this code and fill out this information. But I did find that I believe our state legislature are doing something similar. I can't tell you that it's these exact responses. Todd, what do you know?
I don't think their disclosure requirements are quite as stringent as what we put on local officials right now.
Probably doesn't have any penalties attached either.
Probably not.
Yeah, it depends if you can blame it on the lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Number 4, investments. It says any investments over $5,000. Is that in my own name alone?
Okay, I'm going to read you the code, I hope.
While she's looking for that, if you go on to any legislator's page at utah.gov, there is a link to all their statements they have filled out and submitted. So by year, you can see all of their statements on conflict of interest and ethical statements.
Yeah. Okay, so yours, investments, was subsection F. And let me just see what this says. Todd, hopefully you can help answer it. For each entity in which the regulated officer, which is you, holds any stocks or bonds having a fair market value of $5,000 or more as of the date of the disclosure form or during the preceding year, but excluding funds that are managed by a third party, including blind trusts, managed investment accounts, and mutual funds. So any stocks that you hold, whether it's joint or you, right?
Is posted publicly. So if we have a large mutual fund, we're supposed to break down every stock over $5,000 and post it publicly?
Well, it says excluding funds that are managed by a third party.
Which is your investment guy.
Yeah.
Including blind trust,
which
managed investment accounts, and mutual funds.
Would not everyone use a third party if they were trying to be nefarious? I would. But I'd never do.
Wow. Did that help answer that? I know. I don't love it either. I was dying. And I think this took a lot of city recorders a little bit by surprise. I had talked to Todd because I heard that there were changes, and he felt like this training would be good in January because that's when it's, you know, it's timely. We have to file now in January. And the Lieutenant Governor's office sent out something to all city recorders, came to my personal email. I'm not quite sure how that happened. And then everybody, and we were told we have got to have this link to them by the end of December. And so I just really dove into it because as I read the law, I don't think many understood that you needed to respond to that other section of code, subsection 6. And then I asked the Lieutenant Governor's office for a template, which they provided after I had already prepared this form. So anyway, I hope this helps. I know it's, I don't know what. I can't say too much about it. It's the new legislation, and I'm going to make sure, because this, I'm going to make sure that when candidates are running for office this year that they know that this is a requirement, because it is something that's new, and they may want to know that this will be something that is new.
So, Mayor, I would just say, if any of you have questions about, similar to Councilmember Jackson's question, about whether or not you have to disclose something, please reach out to us and or reach out to Todd, and we can try to answer those questions for you.
But these don't have to be potential conflict sources. These are just all, like, every source of income.
Yeah.
Every source of income.
Correct. And right. Our conflict of interest is still going to be the same, that actually points to the Municipal Officers and Employees Ethics Act, which are, you know, when you have a conflict because of a financial interest, where you'd be doing business with the city or things like that, there will still be that form.
But that's a different section of code. So this is new.
Yeah, this was a new enacted section to that ethics.
And
act.
I think when, you know, as Wendy described her role, my opinion, and this is just my opinion, is that Wendy will put herself less in a position to judge whether your form is accurate or not. She won't be making judgments about what your responses are. If you sign that it's accurate,
you're going to certify. Yeah.
Then we're going to post it, and that will
correct.
Be it. So,
but if you did have a blank section, then I might say you probably want to put not applicable, because you should provide a response. So those are the kind of things that I guess I'll look for is, oh, you didn't answer number 7. You might want to put something there or whatever. Does that make sense? Okay, the bomb dropped.
On that
dropped.
Cheery note.
I know, sorry. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Let's take a 10-minute recess, and then we'll start our regular scheduled meeting. Wendy, are you ready?
No, 1 minute.
I'll give you a minute and a half.